When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, hi, and welcome to this episode of The Emma Gunn Show featuring the authors and hosts of the book and podcast Big Fat Negative, Emma Hazlett and Gabriella Griffith, where I quiz them about the do's and don'ts of talking about fertility and infertility. There's a whole lot in this episode. If you want to listen to this show ad-free, then head to patreon.com/ The Emma Gunn Show now and become a patron. A very, very warm welcome to the podcast to Emma Hazlett and Gabriella Griffith. How are you?
Hello. Very well.
Thank you very much.
I'm delighted to talk to you. You are excellent human beings. We met recently and it was incredibly easy to chat to you when we got the chance to work together. You're journalists, you are authors, you're also podcasters, and your specialist subject, I suppose.
Is this mastermind?
not with me as a host. if we say fertility, infertility, the umbrella terms of all of these things, is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair, I think. Childlessness is what we talk about.
Yeah. We're on the side of the in of the fertility. When it's not going well, that's where we pick things up. We grab the baton.
It'll be okay, guys. Okay, so this is the subject. And I will say this, obviously you have been through your own personal journeys, which you have shared freely and openly on the podcast and also in the book, Big Fat Negative. But you have also really expanded the conversation, which I think is really appropriate because fertility, infertility, wanting to have children, not wanting to have children, it's so nuanced. And whilst everyone is going through their personal journeys, there is so much to consider. There are so many conversations that are adjacent to the fundamental one of whether one wants or doesn't want to have children. And you seem to have really expertly covered all of those topics and are constantly aware of what's coming.
Thanks. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. You know, we've done episodes on everything from the kind of the emotional side, the mental side, but also, you know, things like pets, like the importance of pets when you're going through this. We interviewed Kate Spicer, who wrote Lost Dog. So we've definitely done a lot of topics, right?
Yeah, I think it's this is going to sound really cheesy, but what we found when we first started talking about infertility was that everyone that was coming back to us was saying, I was feeling so alone and now I'm not. Thank you so much. I was feeling so alone. I thought I was the only one. And I think that does expand. That is kind of the umbrella situation for lots of the people that we're talking to, is that they felt alone. And so we're trying to kind of prove to them that they're not.
It is, isn't it? It's one of those conversations that you have to sort of almost like coax out of the darkness and bring into the light. And that's what I think you guys have done really well. And I said to you before we started that I had someone in the Facebook group for the podcast say, one of the things I really liked about the show is that I never talk about fertility and wanting to have kids or not wanting to have kids, because there are plenty of other people doing that on the internet. And I was like, well, in a couple of days.
Well, I hope they're skipping this episode for their sake.
No, I hope they're changing their views on this episode.
That's what I hope, because, okay, let's just be really honest about this. You two, and we'll talk about how you met in a minute, but you are two women who desperately wanted to have children and had your issues along that way. I am a 44-year-old woman who doesn't want to have children, has never had the urge to have children. So come at things from a completely different perspective. And so I suppose the reason why I have never covered it is because it's just not a topic that I have a huge amount of interest in. With that said, it is something that a lot of women struggle with, deal with. And I want to be informed about it, actually, because I want to be helpful and I want to be a safe ear or a safe shoulder for someone if they're going through it and need a place to talk.
That's the thing, isn't it? I think people, friends, even if it's not your place, there will be friends and family that are going through it. And it's good to just know the sensitivities, I suppose, because there's plenty of them.
Yeah, I mean, there's the thing about fertility is it's the oldest subject, right? Like, it's the oldest subject in the world. And there, because of that, there are so many old wives' tales, but there are so many ways that we placate people as well with it. So I remember, you know, really well, a friend of mine saying, we were talking about miscarriage, and this is when we were in our 20s, like we hadn't even considered babies. So one of her friends had a miscarriage or something, and she said, you know, it was just a cluster of cells. It just wasn't meant to be. And back then I remember being like, oh, that's what you say when someone's had a miscarriage. You just say it wasn't meant to be. That's fine. And then they stop talking about it. You move on. And like, obviously then, you know, I entered the space. I started talking about this and realized that that's literally the worst thing you can possibly say to someone. Like, but it just is. It's almost been passed on from generation to generation of like, it's this true. Is how you talk to people going through infertility.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's, I mean, absolute bullshit.
Just relax is our other favourite one, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I think you just maybe stop thinking about it and it will happen. Just relax about it. It'll be fun. Oh, my God. And that's the most unrelaxing thing to hear from anyone.
Do you know what, though? So my sort of, if I had a mastermind subject, it would be like weight, eating, diet and what have you, because of my own issues with that, which is in itself has been a journey and a struggle. And when people used to say to me, when I would say I was really struggling to lose weight, they would say, stop thinking about it.
God. Do you know what? I really think it's something, and I was having a massive rant with one of my colleagues on Twitter about this just yesterday.
What a great place to have a rant.
It's almost like it's designed for that. But she was saying that, you know, as a single person, she gets a lot of, well, just wait and it'll happen. You know, you'll find love when you're least looking for it. And my point was, you know, I think it's a real thing directed at women that if you have to be this kind of passive, feminine creature who just lets things happen to them, you're not allowed to try and take control. And any idea that you are trying to take control, people go, I mean, you're stressing yourself out. I think you need to relax. Like, you know, it'll just happen. It's, you know, it's exactly that. It's just sitting around waiting for things to happen to us, like a kind of medieval damsel. Like, we may as well be just trapped in a tower waiting for somebody to come and rescue us. Like, it's exactly that vibe. We may as well be trapped in a tower waiting for somebody to imbue us with a baby. Like, it's exactly the same thing. So I think, you know, when you're talking about people, I mean, we were talking about this a little bit before, you know, how you've got single friends who are doing this, and I imagine they get just as much shit about, you know, it'll happen with the baby as it'll happen with a partner. And it's just so unfair that women are always being ranted at about this stuff. And that is my Twitter rant over.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Thank you.
It's a great rant. But equally, if you go to the other end of the spectrum and you try to have agency, then all of the words come out, don't they? Aggressive. Yeah. All of those things that aren't very feminine or ladylike.
Well, you just need to relax. That's it. Just relax.
So let's talk about this in terms of fertility, actually, because it's a really good point to say, there's the waiting around. It'll just happen. Just relax. That's obviously at one end of that unhelpful spectrum. But then at the other end, I suppose you've got the person, and I would say a lot of my friends have fallen into this space, who cannot stop consuming information. They go into a forum, someone tells them about a study, or someone tells them about a kind of fertility treatment. And then before you know it, they are an encyclopedia, not a fact-checked encyclopedia, but an encyclopedia nonetheless, because they are just, they've gone in the other direction and they are gathering as much information as they can. But I'm guessing that can be unhelpful also.
Well, we like to talk about the Dr. Google and the 3 a.m. searches that you do when you're just looking for answers. You just want answers and you want to be able to feel like you're doing something to help. And it can be really overwhelming. And like, you know, we talked about it in the book a bit. It's kind of the list of things you should be doing if you're trying for a baby. It's like start exercising, stop exercising, eat nuts, eat pomegranates, eat the core of a pineapple, don't use nail varnish. It's like, where do you go? What do you do? It's incredibly overwhelming.
I think when you're going through infertility, one of the most overarching sensations is just a total loss of control. Mm. Like, we're so used to being in control in our lives. You know, we can order food and get it right there, right then. We can, you know, we control our fertility by taking the pill or using contraceptives. And then suddenly you don't have any control over what's happening to you. And so the natural tendency for like 90% of us is to just look for ways to be more in control. And if that means like, you know, following weird advice to eat pineapple, then like that's often the one that we end up going down. And, you know, I guess it's not so much forewarned as forearmed, but informed feels like you are armed and that you're kind of ready and you're more in control. Of course, like it's, as Gab says, like it's so overwhelming, like it's mental.
I remember acupuncture is another one that everyone says. Ugh. We don't acupuncture. And our acupuncturist, because we shared the same one, was saying, don't eat cold things. You need your belly and your womb area to be warm. And so I was doing IVF and I was like, I found this smoothie in M&S that had like all of the good stuff in it, like folic acid and pomegranates and all the things I'd been told, ding, 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 this is really good. But I didn't want to drink it because it was cold. Oh, so I was walking around taking a sip and holding it in my mouth until it warmed up and then swallowing it. And I was like, I'm insane. It's my mind. I'm just walking around with this purple juice in my mouth, waiting for it to warm up. Like, it, yeah, you can go to some very strange places in all of this. What's our advice on it? I think we listed some of the things because we recognize that feeling like you're taking control is a good thing in this time. But we say, like, do the things that you feel like you can do and don't feel like you need to do them all, because some people hate acupuncture, some people hate pineapple. I mean, if you want to do a few of them that suit you in your life, then do those and feel like you're making a difference. We don't know if you are or not, that's the, you know, but don't try and do them all because your head will explode.
Yeah, and also just make sure you're looking after yourself, because, you know, I was on this diet before I conceived my daughter, that like it was, everything was organic. I couldn't eat anything out of a tin because they've got chemicals in them. Couldn't eat anything that had been wrapped in plastic because they've got chemicals in them. There's chemicals in receipts, so I would refuse to touch receipts, which like really offended a lot of shop owners. Like all this stuff. And basically it just, like every time, you know, you have a failed IVF or you have like, you know, you have a negative pregnancy test, you're like, right, what can I do now? What can I do now that will do it? It's because I touched a receipt. So I think you have to give yourself permission to realize that like not touching touching a receipt isn't going to prevent you from conceiving, probably. Mm. Like in all likelihood. So you have to kind of reason with yourself a bit, I guess.
It's almost like being governed by superstitions.
I mean, yeah. And it's back to those kind of old wives' tales that we tell ourselves, like all these mad things, put your legs up against the wall when you're trying to conceive. Like, it's not going to help, guys. It's not going to help. But like someone's grandma said it once. So
yeah. Our podcast has a segment, or used to have a myth busting segment at the end. You know, I would say 90% of the myths were false, right? But then some of them are true, which really catches you out. So like we did one about somebody told me that I should stop my husband from having hot baths, which is one of his true great pleasures in life. And so I said to him, you need to stop bathing, you need to stop. And he was like, what are you on about? But actually that turned out to be true, that like his sperm was our problem and he was taking really hot baths, and dunking those boys in boiling water is not a great thing to do. So we had to stop having baths. And I was like, I'm so sorry, babes. This myth is true.
Oh no. Okay, right. Yeah. Let's take a step back a little bit. So how did you two meet? And was it just kismet that you started you were both wanting to fall pregnant at the same time, and you were like, hey, I'm not having a great time, but how did you two come together?
So we met at work. Years and years ago, we were working for a magazine called Management Today, which is way less boring than it sounds. Like, it's actually really fun, a really fun job. And then Gabby went off somewhere else. She abandoned me. And so, but we stayed friends. We stayed like good friends, and we hung out a bit, and we used to go on holiday with them. So it was three couples that we used to go on holiday with. So there were three couples. Yeah, that's it.
Six people.
Yeah. And it's one day I think I was saying I'd been trying to conceive for like 3 years, and I was like, I'm gonna do a freaking podcast about this because I'm bored of waiting. I'm gonna make some content. And Gabby said, oh, maybe I could be on it. Like, we've just started trying for a baby, maybe I could be on it. And then it kind of transpired, you know, after a while, that it was taking Gabby a while as well. And I was like, let's do the podcast together. Yeah. Is that how it happened?
Yeah. Vaguely. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of. Yeah. So Emma was already doing IVF when I put my hand up and said, I've been trying for a year and it's not happening. So yeah, then we just jumped in and decided to do the podcast, which was probably the best decision we've ever made.
Well, we'll come on. We won't come on to it later. Let's come on to it now. Why do you reckon that was the best decision you made?
It's like, I mean, you must know this. Podcasting is like doing counselling, but it's free. I mean, we just, every week, it's great. It's free therapy. Every week. Well, partly it was a great decision because, yeah, it was, you know, we had a whole segment that was just us talking about ourselves, which is very easy content.
It's really lovely.
Yeah. But, you know, and it was just us, you know, having a chat. And I think we're both, by our natures, share far too much information, so it was a very, like, it was us having a conversation every week, which is exactly what you do in therapy, right? Mm-hmm. But also that, you know, that element of control, like this need to, instead of consulting Dr. Google, we had a really good excuse to phone up an actual fertility doctor and be like, hey, can you tell us about this? And then you know, so that gave us like an opportunity to learn a lot about what was going on, and meant that we kind of had a fertility doctor on the end of a phone line really when we needed him a lot.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, that was brilliant for us.
It did. Yeah. It did wonders for, I think, both of our mental health, because we all of a sudden, like, you feel like you're out of control and this situation is ruling you and you're just desperately trying for this thing. And we all of a sudden we pulled it back and we were like, no, I'm turning this into something now. This is my story and I'm going to, and it just really, it gave us that empowered kind of feeling about it. Mm. And obviously then when things go wrong or you have a shit day, you've got like, well, that's going to be great on the podcast. So it's like, it's never that bad a day, because you're like, this is a great story for later.
Ooh, content.
Now, I've already said I'm coming at this from a very, from the novice's perspective. And so, Emma, you said you'd been trying for 3 years when you had that first conversation, I think, with Gabby about the podcast. At what point did you start to look for outside help? And is there a bit of a benchmark for anyone listening to this who might be thinking, actually, I've been trying for 18 months, maybe I should, or do I give it another 6 months? Is there a time scale when you go from trying naturally to then thinking we might need to just have some investigation or some intervention?
So the official thing is a year. If you're under 36 and you've been trying for a year, that's when you go to your GP. I am a control freak, and therefore went much sooner than that. And that's partly because we knew that my husband had a chromosomal disorder that meant, well, what it meant was that my chances of losing a pregnancy were much higher, and then my chances of conceiving a child with Down syndrome were much higher. So even before we started trying to conceive, I sent him off to a genetic counsellor to talk to them, and they said, right, you qualify for IVF straight away. So I had in my head, I had the fact that we could do IVF whenever we wanted. But we went to see a woman at a clinic shortly afterwards, and she said, IVF's really shit. Don't do it. Keep trying for a baby naturally. And she was right. It is shit. So we kept trying for a baby naturally. And after about 9 months, I was like, I cannot deal with this. I, you know, just like negative pregnancy test after negative pregnancy test, Googling things. Like there was a low point that I got to where I dug the pregnancy test that I'd done out of the bin because my period was really late. And I was like, it must be this time. So I got to the negative pregnancy test, put it in the bin. And then about an hour later, I was like, well, maybe I just didn't give it long enough. So I went into the bin and took the pregnancy test out of the bin, and it was still negative. And then I was like, about an hour after that, I was like, maybe there's a second line hiding. So I pulled the pregnancy test apart and like looked under the casing, and there wasn't a second line. Spoiler. But it does. At that point, I was like, oh, I'm turning into a crazy person. Like, maybe now is the time to go and talk to someone. So I went to my GP, and she was so nice. And she was like, I kind of immediately started crying. She was like, let's get someone to look at you. Like, it hasn't been a year, but we'll start the tests now. And I think because the general advice is do it after a year, one thing that a lot of people don't know is that if you have any history of, like, you know, your periods are a bit funny, like your cycles are a bit funny, or you have a lot of period pain or anything like that, you can actually get tests a bit sooner than that, and they can start your tests sooner than that. So it's worth going to the doctor and asking.
Interesting.
Yeah. On both sides as well, because my husband had mumps in his early 20s where his testicle had swollen to the size of a lemon, which is one of his favorite stories, and so that was always in the back of our mind when we started trying. But we were kind of like, I'm sure it'll be fine. But then, like, I think 10 months later, we were like, maybe this isn't fine. So that was kind of alarm bells ringing. And that, again, you were able to go to the GP and say, look, this is our history, can you look into it? And so it was a little bit earlier than a year for us as well.
Can you talk to me about what it's like to start trying for a baby, which you just think, oh, I'll start trying for a baby, and then what happens emotionally when you realize perhaps that this isn't going to happen like you thought it was?
I think it does weird things to you, because, you know, you spent your entire life trying not to get pregnant, right? You have had all kinds of like horror stories at school, sex education lessons where they're like, if you look at a boy funny, you will get pregnant, use a condom. And so you do, I mean, it's such a cliche to say, I feel like everyone says it, but you do assume, well, I'll get pregnant. And so the first, you know, if you're anything like me, you do a lot of Googling, you do a lot of like looking into it, what should I be expecting? And so you kind of begin to understand the, because I, you know, none of us actually really know how bodies work, the first thing I did was learn about our cycle and when I should be expecting and when I should be kind of having sex and stuff, for me it was really quick to go from, oh, we'll just try and see what happens, to I'm going to lose it if I see another single line on a pregnancy test. It just, you become exhausted by it. Like, it just takes up, often it takes up every waking thought. Like, Gabs has a really good story about just being at work and crying.
It's a great story. I think, yeah, you just it's very hard to leave your emotions at the door when you go to work, right? Sometimes I go in, and I was just, one day I was in a meeting and I just, this just big tears just started rolling down my face. I was trying to like make notes for them, and I was like, I hope nobody's noticing this because I can't stop them. But it's really tough. And we often say that that period where we were trying naturally before we went into IVF is actually almost harder, because you kind of go in at it, it's such an exciting time, and you're like, oh wow, this is so beautiful for us. And you go off and you go to these nice hotels and you're like, oh, I would bet that was the one, that's going to be the, you know, the real doozy. And and slowly but surely that's not happening, and it really takes it out of you. And it's a roller coaster every month, up and down, up and down, up and down. It's kind of, it's really hard. And then when, you know, if you do go down the medicated route, suddenly science has taken over, and it's almost a relief. You're kind of like, oh, brilliant. Well, now obviously we'll get pregnant, which is another story, because spoiler, that doesn't always happen too. But but that first bit is just, it's a real roller coaster.
Well, you say that about it doesn't always happen, but one of the things that I heard coming out of my mouth recently, and I had to, as soon as I said that, I said, I'm really sorry I said that, is that every single person I know who's been through IVF, who was told that they have been through IVF or some form of fertility treatment, has eventually conceived or has eventually had the baby that they always wanted. And so normally when that fell out of my mouth is when someone was saying, oh, we're going to do another round. And we're talking about double digits now that they are in terms of rounds. And at some point you just sort of think, when do you say to somebody, you got to stop now? Or like, yeah. Can you ever say that?
I don't think you can. I think it's up to them. You just have to be supportive. And it's so hard. I was talking to a friend just this morning about her mate has had quite a few pregnancy losses, and it's like doing increasingly mad things to try and get pregnant, including like paying a grand to somebody who insists that through diet they can heal everything. And I know. And she was like, I don't know what to say to her. And I was like, you cannot say anything, because it is their money. Like, they have to reach their own conclusions. And hopefully that person is going through counseling or therapy and will be able to come to that conclusion themselves. But it's very hard when you've got the Daily Mail like publishing stories saying, oh, we did 25 rounds of IVF and we finally got our miracle baby, and in the process they spent like hundreds of thousands of pounds. But yeah, that never give up kind of narrative is very it's kind of very beguiling, isn't it? It's very like attractive, and especially again in our world where we are used to achieving results from working hard.
Yeah,
it's really damaging for people who have reached their end point where they know where their line was, they've reached it and they've stopped, and then to have those continuing narratives of, well, I never gave up hope, I kept going. You kind of, it can be quite kind of poisonous for other people. And it, you know, oh my cat's just jumped on my lap.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's a funny one, but I think we've spoken to a lot of people who tend to know what their stop point is. And obviously for some people that's a lot longer and they do reach double digits, but a lot of people have a kind of time in mind when they're going to stop. And we've also heard of doctors suggesting that people stop, because I think fertility doctors, even though they're making money out of people, they also see mental health. They see people's mental health and they have turned around and said, I don't think you should do anymore, you know.
Yeah, there's also a budgetary constraint. You know,
it's not cheap.
It's not cheap.
It is not cheap at all. And so you started the podcast. How was it for you guys when one of you conceives and the other one is still? What was that like during your friendship and during your journey of working together on this? Because Emma, it was you can see first.
It was me.
Yeah. She did.
So Gabby, did you want to kill Emma?
It was a weird time because we'd been doing the podcast for like 8 or 9 months. And suddenly, even though we'd done all of these interviews and telling people they're not alone, I felt really alone when it worked. But obviously, because I knew what she'd been through, I was so happy and I was really relieved that it didn't go the other way. But also, yeah, there was that kind of feeling of like, oh, it's just me now. But luckily it only lasted for 4 months. So
yeah,
I kind of followed fairly quickly.
And that does seem to be the thing that is one of the bigger struggles. If the actual struggle to conceive is struggle number one, struggle number two is the world happening around you and people not having the problems that you're having.
Yeah. I've got a really labored train metaphor, which I will now give you. which is about like when you're trying for a baby, it feels a bit like you're kind of stuck on a train that's like got signaling problems. And so all your mates, like you've got some friends at like single and loving it station who are just having a really nice time. And you've got some friends at like, we've got loads of babies station. We've got loads of babies junction. that are just like, they're more tired than you, admittedly, but they're, you know, they seem happy. And you're kind of stuck on a siding somewhere and you've got no phone signal, so you can't phone anyone and tell them what's going on, and you just are completely alone. And that it's very isolating, like when all your mates are, you know, in a different place. And I think, you know, one of the things that we've written a book is that like a lot of your friendships are formed because you experience things together, right? So like Gabby and I worked together and we both got married at like relatively within a couple of years of each other. And, you know, you go through big life events with your friends. Everybody goes through it. And when you're left out of that big life event, suddenly you just feel really behind and really left out. And that's, you know, that's really hard.
Is it like when everyone at school has a certain, and I'm using this example because I'm just trying to sort of make it really accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
But when everyone else has like a certain type of shoes or a bag.
Or a certain backpack.
And you just feel.
Everyone in my school got an Eastpak, one of those tiny mini Eastpaks. And I didn't because they were too expensive.
It's weird, it's a tribal thing, isn't it? You just feel completely left out and on the sideline, and you feel different because you're not the same, and it makes you feel like a complete oddity.
Absolutely.
And to Emma's point earlier, like, you made plans, you've got your life plan, you know that's what you're doing next, but then it's not happening, so you're like, well, what do I do now? Where does the life go? What do I go to? What station do I go to next? I'm not going to that one. It can feel isolating. And of course, Instagram and Facebook have a lot to answer for because, you know, it's just full of first day. Oh, having a baby. Oh, having another one. It's just, it's kind of constant. When you're a woman of a certain age, that is. And because I suppose people post those good news stories. They don't post this bad stuff. And so you just think, well, everyone's getting pregnant really easily apart from me.
Yeah. Well, don't you find it's the opposite ends of both spectrums at the moment? It's either the really good stuff or it's the hysterical crying post with the awful thing that I'm going through at the moment. And where's the middle ground?
Yeah, hang on a minute while I just switch my camera on, and now I'm going to cry. Sorry. I do think that scan pictures should be illegal on Instagram, like just make them illegal. Although I do have a really beautiful ultrasound of a 9-centimeter cyst on my left ovary that I might share.
Publish that puppy.
Yeah.
People need to see the fist cyst, as we like to call it.
But you're right, people do. I mean, you know, sharing the kind of sadness stuff is, you know, it's hard, isn't it? Because we're British. So there's a part of you that's like, oh. But then that's kind of what Gabby and I do. So,
but it's helpful, and it's, as you said, the thing that I guess is the common thread through your content is not people not having to feel that they're on their own, because they certainly aren't. But it's like, but they're, even within that, there's got to be some boundaries.
I do get a bit like, oh God, with that stuff. But you know, sharing vulnerability is great. It's really great. It's just that I'm too English to really embrace it properly.
I suppose one of the things we also have always tried to do is laugh. So like a lot of our, you know, our podcast is kind of joking about the rubbish stuff that's happening to us and using humor as much as possible, because I think, you know, yes, it is traumatic, but there's some really hilarious situations that you find yourself in when you're going through infertility and IVF, and we just make sure that we make people have a giggle about them, because once you do that, it's again takes the edge off, doesn't it?
Well, I was gonna say Gabby's husband had a really good like getting sperm to the hospital on time.
My story.
If you'd like to hear it,
go ahead.
So when you're having your sperm tested by a clinic or your doctors, you tend to have to produce a sample at home and get it to the clinic within an hour, not too hot, not too cold, just the right temperature. And yeah, on the hottest day of the year, my husband had to get his golden syrup across town and was sweating and like running, and got to the hospital, was so flustered that he handed his little pot of joy to the wrong person, who then disappeared off with a random pot of sperm, was like, what the hell? And so we had to do it all over again anyway. But we basically, we were having a giggle about this, and we called it the whack off races. That's what we called
it. Trademark that immediately.
So,
if someone's listening to this, obviously my first thing would be, right, well, listen to their podcast and read their book and surround yourself with it's not just the loving kindness of the content, it's the informed content, because you say you get fertility doctors on, you get people who have done the time in medical school, as much as you have the anecdotal stuff from guests and their own fertility, you are able to sift through a lot of the medical noise and present people who are up to date. So if someone's listening to this, and whether they're coming at it from the perspective of they would like to conceive, or whether they're a bit more like me and they're just like, they just want to know the right thing to say and not to be unhelpful, which is one of the biggest things I think most of us don't want to do, is accidentally trigger someone going through this. What would you say are the fundamental sort of truisms that are most helpful that you've learned from speaking to all of the people that you've spoken to?
The thing that we always say is that if you're going through it, find someone to talk to about it. Like, even if it's like, if you're writing a journal or something, you just need an outlet. That's always like the most important thing that we say.
Yeah. I think the other one is, if your friend is going through it, I think the natural inclination in these situations is to try and fix.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Something for someone, but I think the best thing to say to someone is just, that's really awful, I'm so sorry, and I'm here if you want to talk to me about it. Don't offer kind of all of those things that you've heard, like just relax or go on a holiday or if you tried acupuncture, because you guarantee that the person has thought about those things and actually they just want someone that they can talk to. I think that's the most important one. And also, one of the other things we always say about pregnancy announcements is if you, one of your friends is going through this and you find yourself pregnant, drop them a text or a WhatsApp before you reveal the news, because don't do it to their face, because they might be upset and they might need to rearrange their face before they see you. And just a heads up on text is always a good one.
Yeah. I know one of you, I've forgotten now who, from when we had our last conversation, did you have a friend who said, I'm going to be telling everyone about my news, and if you need to not hear from me, see me or speak to me for the next nine months, then I understand.
Yeah, that was my best friend Sophie, who's an angel. So we'd just gone to Paris together and had a really nice time, and she already had a little girl, and she said, we're gonna be trying for our second when we get back. And she's the most hyper fertile person I've ever met in my life. And so precisely 4 weeks after that conversation, my phone rang and I ignored it because I knew what she was going to say. And then it rang like 20 more times. And I was like, phew. So I answered it and she said, this is the call. And I said, okay. And then I went, congratulations, like that. And she said, look, we have been best friends for 20 years. If you need to spend the next 9 months not seeing me or hearing from me, I'm okay with that. And at that point I was like, oh, it actually makes me tear up a bit thinking about it. But then she ended up, she had not only conceived, but she conceived twins because she had ovulated twice that month.
And so greedy.
So that's greedy, just selfish.
The absolute irony of the situation made me laugh so much that, like, you know, it just, we, you know, I didn't have to cut off all communication, but she was just so kind about it. And yeah, she's just one of life's great people.
And I think this is the thing, is that's a really lovely example, but then also they're just saying, what you're going through is awful. If you want to talk, I will be here to listen. And then not say, just relax, or have you tried acupuncture? I mean, for someone like me who's on the outside of it, those are really simple rules to follow.
Yeah, it's really easy, guys.
Yeah, just don't tell people what to do. Yeah. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because I guess you know your friends best. So some people will be like, really want to talk about it, and some people won't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And even now, I wonder whether to say, how are you, like, how's it going, and then make that face, or to just leave it alone. But I think it's a kind of case-by-case basis situation there, isn't it? Like, if you've got a friend who, you know, really likes talking about stuff, then that's fine. But if you've got a friend who clearly would rather not talk about it, then don't like force the issue.
Well, precisely. We've talked as well about the conversations that go on adjacent to this fundamental pillar that you guys have, and you've covered a lot of them. What about the people who don't want to get involved, who don't want children? Have you explored that a great deal, or are they, are those your foes? Are those your enemies? How could you
No, I wish I didn't want children. My life would be so much easier. Like, can you imagine? No, I do think that, you know, in the grand sisterhood of life, people who are infertile and people who don't want kids really should be banding together, because I think you get the same shit. Like, if you're infertile, you don't really want to tell everyone what you're going through, right? So you, like, if like Auntie Jane says, why haven't you had kids yet? There's no point going into like 15 minute explanation of your fallopian tubes. Do you just go, we just haven't started trying. But it's like, you know, women not doing things that women are supposed to do is such a taboo.
Yeah.
That I just think, and I honestly, I've never been a very maternal person. Like, I don't really like babies at all. And I think if I do wonder if somebody had told me before I started trying for a baby, you're not going to be able to do it, whether I would have actually been able to make my peace with that and move on and just live a glorious life without a kid. Obviously, I love my daughter. She's amazing. But yeah, I think a huge element of what I went through was wanting what I couldn't have.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I just...
Go ahead, Gabby.
I was just going to say, it's as you say, it's that kind of heading people off with the same comments, the same frustrating comments all the time. And it's the same for both parties. So I think it's having those answers that will, you know, you can go to straight away without feeling that flush of like, oh, what do I say to this? It's kind of just knowing what your answer is and just being confident about it, because like, it's rubbish and no one wants to be put on the spot in any situation, and you know, just know what to say.
Yeah, we get just relaxed. You must get all kinds of, well, don't you want kids? Oh, you make such a good mum. That kind of shite.
Well, no, I head them off with the pass that with I would be a terrible mother, because I don't think there's much you can say back to that.
Yes, yes, you would.
So that's just been my defense mechanism, but. It's a funny one, because I feel desperately sorry for the people who can't. And actually, I had the opposite experience from, I think, some of the people that you've spoken to, in that I was diagnosed with PCOS at 17, but after it had been really present for a long time, like from the age of 11, 12, and had really severe symptoms, but it took quite a long time to get a diagnosis. And the first consultation with a gynecologist was, you're going to really struggle to conceive. So when that comes time, when you want to think about that, there will be drugs and medications and obviously IVF. And now, this was the mid 90s at the time. So I think a switch either went off in my head, or because of my hormones, I never had that maternal switch go on. But weirdly, a few years ago, I thought that my PCOS was getting more severe. And I asked for an ultrasound again to confirm the diagnosis. And I saw on the screen, she was like, not only have you not got any cysts, like, you're really, that looks great. You're very fertile and you're ovulating right now. And actually, to know that I wouldn't have those issues, that actually took me, there was a 48 hours where I felt very, very strange, because I thought,
right,
had I got this factory setting of, I don't want children, because I just thought I don't want the fight.
Yeah.
Because of what I was told when I was 17, or is this real? I don't know.
That's really interesting. And I'm sure that you could delve into that with a therapist for a really long time. But yeah, and it's interesting, because I guess you know, it's the same as infertility. You know this about yourself, right? I am going to have children one day. That is a thing that you exist with, a fact. And then when you're told you can't, it's like, but I want to. Whereas I guess, you know, the decision, I'm not going to have children one day, to be then told that you could, you're like, oh. It's just like, it's a truth that you know about yourself. And then I guess if that truth is challenged, it makes you feel strange.
Yeah, it was a very strange feeling, but I guess completely different from well, there's nothing I can do about that. I sort of very quickly came to the point of, well, I have no control over that. There's nothing I can do mm-hmm. about that. I can't buy back time and have babies in my 20s. So mm-hmm. what's the point in getting upset? Like, what's done is done. But I guess it must be very different from the perspective that you guys come at it from, in that when you're told, yes, there's some problems, we might need to go through IVF. I don't even know how they phrase it. You can tell I'm getting clunky now. Like, does anyone ever say to you, yes, Ms. Aslett, you are going to really struggle here? Is it dealt with? Does it get quite clinical?
I read once that when people are diagnosed with cancer, the doctors are trained not to use the C word until the patient comes to it themselves. And I feel like that might actually be the case with IVF, because I remember I had had an operation to look at my fallopian tubes because it turned out they were completely blocked. And I had this doctor come in and she said, oh yeah, I've sealed one of them because there's no point. The other one looks, I can't remember the language she used, but essentially pretty ropey as well. But I've left it open because you only get one round of IVF on the NHS in this area. And I was like, so I'm going to need IVF. Oh, that's the situation.
Oh, so that's how you found out. That was the path. Wow.
Yeah. So, and at that point I was like, oh, so I need IVF. And then the second, they ended up having to seal off my second fallopian tube as well, because it had a big bit of essentially stagnant water in it that was like leaking into my uterus. It's really gross. And this guy came, I remember just waking up from the, by myself, waking up from the anaesthetic, just, you know, so groggy. And this guy just came over and he went, oh yeah, we did have to close it off. And there's just walked off. And I was like, and I just remember in my head being like, oh, I'm barren. Like, I'm completely barren. I cannot conceive naturally. And then lying there and being like, that guy's an asshole for saying that to me.
That could have been delivered a bit nicer.
And then as I woke up, like, he walked past again and I was, excuse me, come here. And was like, you don't tell a woman that she's completely infertile like that. And he was like, oh, I'm really sorry. And I was like, you will be. But yeah, I mean, I don't know whether, you know, that's their training. It's like, you kind of have to let the patient come to the realization themselves. What did you have, Gabs? I can't remember.
Well, I suppose my husband's first sperm test results came back to our GP. So this is not a clinic that's used to talking about infertility. And the GP just rang my husband and said, yeah, I mean, I've seen worse. And we were like, what does that mean? Does that mean we have to have IVF, but it's not as bad? Or does that mean, you know, I think when you can have medical practitioners that aren't properly trained in the specific area, you can get some really insensitive ways of handling things that you're like, and we didn't have any, they didn't say anything. They didn't give us any information other than that, what it meant, where we should go, how we should, you know, we all just had to kind of fumble around and find our way forward ourselves. So it is a weird one, but we've always been told, in terms of diagnosis, it is on my husband's side, but we've always been told we could get pregnant naturally. That's this little thing dangling above us, like, the treat, it could happen, the carrot to keep shagging. it has never happened, so who knows.
I suppose it's that other thing as well, is that everything that anyone says to you, just there's 1,000 questions that you might have.
Yeah.
And that's what, and I think that's why this space can be really confusing for people who are going through it, because if you can't keep going back and having follow-up appointments and saying, oh, you said that thing. So where do you go? You go to a forum and you seek. I mean, obviously there are wonderful things to be gained from being part of a community, but at what point is it helpful and is it unhelpful, do you think, to immerse yourself in nothing but conversations about this with people who perhaps aren't qualified or don't have the medical experience?
It's definitely a fine line between it. I think forums and for us, it was Instagram, are amazing for the emotional support. I wouldn't try and get medical advice from there. That said, we try on the podcast, we really try and avoid medical advice, but every now and then something slips out, which is not great. But yeah, I mean, yeah, they're great for emotional support. I think you just, you need to realize none of these people have been to medical school.
I think it's things important. You kind of pick up things to speak to your doctor about, really. I think that's the way to treat it. Like, you know, obviously, if you're on Instagram and in the TTC world of Instagram, which is huge, just for those who aren't in it, it's insane.
By the way, TTC, for those of you who don't know, because I didn't when I picked up the book, is trying to conceive. Yes, but these ladies, I believe it's on page 196, because it is my most thumbed page, 296, is a glossary of all of the abbreviations, all of the acronyms, any shorthand. It's even if you're not trying to conceive, it is vital if you want to have a conversation with someone who is.
Yes. It's like Mumsnet, but non-Mumsnet. It's like all the weird little acronyms.
Yeah, it's not quite as annoying as Mumsnet, I find, though. But but yeah, there's a big trying to conceive community on Instagram, which if you are not involved, you can, you know, we, if people want to get involved with it, we always say you don't have to have a public profile. You can set up, like, lots of people set up anonymous profiles and kind of start interacting with others that are going through different stages. But and there are a lot of people on there who will have been in your position, have been through what you're going through, and they can offer advice. They'll tell you what they've done. But I suppose the thing is just to take everything with a pinch of salt and go back and speak to your own doctor. So if someone recommends a certain drug, make a note of it. Okay, yeah. I'll speak to my doctor about it. Don't kind of pin all your hopes on it being your solution.
That's the thing, isn't it? Now, in the book, you have shared your own journey, and you allude to the fact that this really is a journey for everybody, no matter how quickly it might happen or however long it might take. It really is a journey, mainly an emotional one.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of, we mock the word journey a little bit on the podcast. We call it our journey because there's no better word for it, annoyingly, but it's just, it's, we hate the word. But what was the question?
It's about, well, but basically where the book starts with, tell us about your journey, because it isn't, it's not something you can kind of wrap up in a sexy little media soundbite nugget, is it?
No.
Every story is a journey and has its own twists and turns.
I mean, by the time that you're, you know, going to your doctor, if you've been trying for a year already, you've already been on a journey. Like, you've already, it's been a process. And it's, by that, at that point, it's mainly emotional. It's like mainly in your head. But I think, you know, any kind of trying to conceive journey is hard. By the time you're using the J word, you're having a hard time.
You've got battle scars, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
And, and yeah, the reason we open with that is because of that kind of cathartic thing of, like, you know, come on then. It's like, you know, lots of things that people go through trauma, talking about it can really help. So that's, yeah. But we do hate the word journey, and we have thought about alternatives, and yes, as Emma said, there are none.
there are none, and then no. the one, some one will appear, and it will be even worse than journey. You know that.
Yeah.
Adventure? No, it's not an adventure.
Because it'll be something. There will be one, and we'll be like, oh god, remember the good old journey days?
Because yeah,
it will. Let's go back to journey.
It'll be a little bit of something or other. So if someone's listening to this and they're thinking, right, a lot of this really resonates with me, I've been trying for over a year and nothing's happening, three simple things that you could tell them to do that would just give them that sense that they're taking control but not becoming obsessed.
I would say, I don't think I've ever given this advice before, but track your cycles. Because when you do approach your doctor, the more information you have for them, the better. Gabby?
Find a way of getting it out. Don't have to start a podcast, you don't have to broadcast it, but either writing it down in a diary or finding a friend, because, you know, even if you don't, you're not aware of a friend going through it, you probably do have someone in your circle that is also experiencing it, and just get it out. Because you lock it inside and you're sitting at home with your partner, perhaps just thinking, god, we're the only ones going through this. It's horrible. The minute you realize, it's like a valve's turned and the pressure's released, you're like, oh, okay, get some of it out. That's definitely a big one.
And I would say also, don't let yourself get fobbed off right? So don't let yourself get fobbed off by friends telling you to relax. Don't let yourself get fobbed off by a doctor who goes, oh, you'll be fine. Like, there's a lot of opportunities to get fobbed off in this situation. Mm. And if you think there's something wrong, listen to yourself, listen to that body, listen to, you know, what's going on in your head. And, you know, what's the worst you can do? You go for a scan, they say everything's fine. Like, you know, really push for those tests, push for stuff, because it's so easy to be fobbed off here.
You know what I think so wonderful about what you guys are doing as well? So I have friends who have gone through this journey, and then poof, one day they announce that they are pregnant. They've gone on to have one or more kids. Mm-hmm. But before that, they were so invested in the world of infertility that they were creating podcasts, or they were had social media feeds dedicated to my IVF journey or my journey to conceive. And then they fall pregnant and boof, it evaporates. And what that's meant for me is that I have had friends who have then said they felt really abandoned, and actually it's made them feel really crappy, because it's like, well, you're now free of it, and I'm still chained to this awful experience that's causing me the most distress of anything in my life. And yet you have both had your kids and you haven't abandoned anybody. You're still out there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Keeping people buoyant at a really difficult time.
It's just such a shitty thing to go through.
Yeah, I think we know how awful it is, and we just have a drive to continue trying to offer something. You know, I think it has been interesting, because obviously we've gone from talking very much about ourselves to not talking about ourselves, because we have children. That's our lives now, and people don't want to hear about that, and we know that they don't. We understand that. So we have kept the podcast a baby-free space. We know too much, and we're still curious as well. We still want to hear more stories. So I guess we just have kept going. I don't know how long we'll keep going for.
But. Yeah. But also we're journalists. Like, it's what we do. We write about stuff, and we like to cover a story, and, you know, infertility is a story that goes on and on.
It is. One in six couples will struggle to conceive. That's a lot of people. So
that is a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason why it's the thing that really stood out for me when I met you guys is because I've talked about things on this podcast from my own personal perspective. So I've talked about my mental health. I've talked about the struggles that I've had with my weight and eating issues over the years. And I'm a journalist too. I try to put out really considered and helpful content on those subjects and gather in the best guests that I can bring people in order to help them. But there comes a point where I have to be quite boundaried, and I struggle with sending the elevator back down, because part of me wants to get in that elevator and get as many people on as possible. But then I worry that I will relapse or will lose pace on my own journey. Have you had that sort of feeling about what you're doing?
Well, the great thing about infertility is that once you kind of have had, in quotes, success, you can't really relapse. Do you know what I mean? You've already achieved a goal, and that makes it different to a lot of other chronic illnesses. And infertility is regarded as a chronic illness, which, you know, makes us very lucky. So I guess it's about, for us, amplifying voices and, you know, all the other kind of cliched terms, but making people feel supported.
But also, we do understand that, like, people that have been through it who don't want to talk about it anymore, because it's been all consuming for such a long time, and all you've been able to talk about with your partner, and all, you know, all that's on your mind, you get to the other side and you kind of think, well, I can't talk about that anymore. I'm done. I'm done. I don't want to. And that's completely okay as well. I think it's kind of understandable. I guess we're just
gluttons for punishment.
Masochistic.
Before I let you go, I'm going to ask you, you create the podcast, which is excellent. You've written the book. I want to focus in on the book, because I think writing about these things might be talking about some personal experience here. Going over those old feelings and emotions can stir a lot up. So I wonder if, in writing the book, what was churned up for you? Maybe let's start with you, Gabby. Was there anything in particular that was churned up for you, or that you were able to revisit in a way that actually helped you, I don't know, even put it to bed, perhaps more securely than it had been before?
I think I think one of the things that was quite hard for me writing it was talking about friendships and difficult points in friendships that have, because that, it, you know, friends say the wrong things, friends don't know what to do, it does impact you, and kind of turning those stories into something that's okay to put in the book was quite tricky, and also, you know, I guess helped me to kind of deal with some of those feelings of like, okay, that was bad, they did not treat me in the way they should have, you know, and can I move past that? I think that was kind of, that was probably one of the primary ones for me. I mean, all of it's emotional. I think the other one was we did a chapter about partners, because it's quite tricky being a partner going through this as well, especially when you hit IVF, because they're kind of ignored. And I interviewed my husband and Emma's husband, and it was quite weird hearing them say things that they had never said to us before about how their feelings were when they were going through it. I found that quite difficult. I heard things that, yeah, you know, my husband thought it was going to be the end of us, you know, all of these kind of things that he'd never said. I was like, wow, okay, this is big.
It becomes definitely... this does become the female, the woman's problem in that, in a heteronormative dynamic, doesn't it? If you're going through IVF, it becomes the woman's problem. It's that she's going through IVF and they're sort of around. Is that how it is? Yeah. I guess.
Yeah, they're not really engaged with, other than here's your pot, go and do your special sauce. And it shouldn't be that way. You know, I think there's lots of people who are kind of campaigning for that to not be the case. But it is, and people assume it's on the woman's side as well, you know. People assume that you're going through IVF because you've got a problem, and 50% of infertility is male infertility, so like that's maddening.
Yeah. And what about you, Emma? Was there anything that you were able to see through fresh eyes? Because that's what it sounds like with you, Gabby, with the friendships, is that maybe at the time it was all quite heightened, and with a bit of space and revisiting it, there was a bit more clarity, and the sort of the sting was maybe taken out of some of the things that hadn't felt so pleasant.
For me, it was, I went back over a lot of old diaries, because it's funny, you know, how you kind of, I don't want to say forget, but definitely the emotion is, you know, it's like sanded down later on, right? The edges are taken off. So you can kind of remember how sad you were, but like reading my diaries, I just remember the anguish. But one of the things actually that really I found so hard to write was, I did a chapter on miscarriage, and I've never had a miscarriage, like a touch wood. I've never lost a pregnancy. But when I was pregnant with my daughter, I was told that I was going to lose her, and that it was a non-viable pregnancy. And I remember I walked around, because I was living in Notting Hill at the time, I walked around Hyde Park a lot, just thinking about it, and thinking about, you know, this little thing that was in my uterus that I was going to lose. And it was just the intensity of emotion and the pain of pregnancy loss. You know, I've been trying, by the time I got pregnant, I'd been trying for 3.5-4 years, like around that. Was finally pregnant for the first time ever. Sorry, that's my cat complaining. And then I wrote this chapter on pregnancy loss. And I remember when I conceived, at the same time as someone I knew on Instagram. And she, it was like literally within a couple of days of each other, we both did a round of IVF, and we both started bleeding around the same time and had this kind of horrible stuff happen. And she lost her baby and I didn't. And I interviewed her for the book. And she talked about it, and I just, God, the pain and the anguish and the sadness. And I spoke to, you know, a couple of people for it, and it was just so intense. I found it incredibly hard to write and just incredibly sad. And yeah, I did a lot of crying during that chapter. But I think it's a, you know, I hope that it's a good chapter to read, because, you know, one of the things that I wanted to include, because I, you know, this person that I was in touch with had lost her baby at the same time as we were both pregnant at the same time. I wanted to talk about the physical effects of miscarriage, because most people, when they're, you know, when they're told they're losing their baby, they're told it's going to be like a heavy period. It's not like heavy period. It's like you're losing a baby. And so I think that's something that really isn't, or is very rarely written about, is that, you know, what happens to your body when you lose a baby? And the answer is it's not very nice.
I've deliberately skirted some of these topics on in our conversation here simply because I know that you have addressed them so brilliantly, not only in the book, but also on the podcast. And I don't think an excavation of really intense subjects like that is maybe appropriate. But this is just to say, listeners, that obviously if you are going through that, or if anyone that you know goes through that, Emma and Gabby have got the best content. Because I think sometimes putting in your headphones and just being able to be, to hear from people like you who aren't afraid to pull punches when it comes to vocabulary, who aren't afraid to pull punches when it comes to actually describing what goes on, that can sometimes be the most comforting thing. Because I'm not that I'm going to sugarcoat it, but I'm not going to do it justice because I don't know, whereas you guys do, which is why, yeah, big fat negative. Go and read it. Go and listen to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Is there anything else you would like to leave listeners with before I let you go to perhaps do a podcast with both of your cats who seem to have really wanted to join in?
Yeah. I mean, the BFN cats are famous. I think we've already said it, but just find someone to talk to. Just talk to anyone.
Yeah.
That's definitely the key. Thank you so much for your time. Honestly, listeners, I tried to stay abreast of what's going on because I have lots of friends who are going through this at different stages, and I always want to be the person who's saying the right thing, and I don't always get it right. But since I discovered you guys, I genuinely think this is the best. You guys are the best resource out there for anyone, wherever you are in the journey, even if you're not participating, if you're like me, if you're wanting to be helpful. I think your book and your podcast are freaking amazing and vital, actually. So there you go. I will put the links to both of you and the show and the book in the show notes. But it's been a pleasure to chat to you.
Yeah, thanks for being so nice.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
A pleasure. Anytime. Thank you so much for listening. Why not become a patron of the Emma Gunn Show today? For just £3 a month, you can enjoy episodes of the podcast ad-free and in video. That's just £3, less than a cup of coffee for a whole month of the show. Your support means I can keep creating the podcast and also invest in production and creation of bonus content for you to enjoy. To become a patron, all you have to do is head over to patreon.com/The Emma Gunn Show now.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said. Done.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.